All right, good morning. Happy Friday. You made it. You're there. It's the end of the week. Weekend is staring you down. Life is beautiful. We've got a great 2 hours of sports talk radio magic. As Tua Tagovailoa would say, there ain't no void of silence coming here. Let's go. Let's get it done. Stupid things make me laugh for a very, very, very long time. So that void of silence thing is going to just be a recurring theme here on the program. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. Our guy Chris Lopresti going to give us some updates, bottom of each hour. Clay Harbor will be on the program in an hour. Ryan Hickey is here in the jubilant, positive way he always is. Love that guy. Guy's crushing it in the role. He can't be Bum of the Week. I don't think he's even going to be nominated. I can be. I will be nominated. We'll see who wins that at the end of the program. A lot of things to get into. Dodgers dominance continues. Brewers down 3-0. Man, the Dodgers pitching staff has been just amazing. We'll talk about the game, and we'll talk about the fact the Blue Jays have made a series of it against the Mariners, have done what the Brewers could not do. But also get into whether or not, this is a debate that is bubbling across baseball, are the Dodgers good for baseball? Are they bad for baseball? Ratings are up. Interest is there. Postseason's been riveting. No team has been a back-to-back champion. Dodgers trying to do that in a hot minute. We'll talk about that later in the program. Really big college football weekend. Some put-up-or-shut-up games. USC's got one of those. Some prove-it moments coming up this weekend. So we'll talk about that. We'll do by ourselves. We always do. A lot of things to get into. But don't you hate it when you have to start with the obvious? But we do. Who doubted Joe Flacco's greatness? Not me, cricket sound. No, this is, look, Joe Cool is Joe surprised. I mean, this guy, Joe Flacco, last night was absolutely remarkable against the Steelers. And we've got a colleague. I'm not even going to say it out loud. It's so awful. But we have a colleague in a local market who said that if the Bengals beat the Steelers, he would do something to his body without numbing agents. And let me just tell you, whoo, don't do it. Absolute shocker of a game. Joe Flacco to the rescue. And here's the reality behind the 33-31 victory for the Bengals that pulls them within striking distance. They're 3-4 of 500. Here's the reality of Joe Flacco having played, it's just two games, remarkable football, remarkable level as a quarterback, different guy than the guy we saw in Cleveland. Here's the reality of an AFC that, as we have discussed, is a lot weaker than we expected it to be. In fact, the weakness of the AFC is part of the reason that a lot of us swung a miss and said Bengals season is over. No, everything I just gave you points, I had to help my kid with his math homework the other day, so I have equations in my head, equal sign the fact that Cincinnati's season is not over. And it turns out Joe Flacco might just be good enough, and the Bengals might just with him be scrappy enough coming off that Thursday night football victory when they were 5.5-point dogs, by the way, to at least be in striking distance for the playoffs when their Joe Burrow, their other Joe Cool, I guess Joe Cool too, comes back hopefully in December. And the schedule's not, it's not impossible. Look, I know the Jets are probably going to win a football game at some point. I get it. I got it. I understand it. Jets are next up for Cincinnati. So while you don't mark them down as 4-4 yet, you basically mark them down as 4-4. And it almost feels like a bye, right? The advantage of playing a Thursday night football game is if you can get the W like they did last night, if you can, in this case, shock the Steelers, have a game-winning drive, overcome some Aaron Rodgers heroics, it's not just the lift of that moment, and obviously the W you get in the win column, you get extra time to rest, to prepare, to get your body right, to come up with a game plan. Not that you need those things for the Jets, but you have them. So you're probably looking at a Bengals team in a week and a half that's going to be 4-4. Then they have the Bears. It's a tricky one. Then they've got this same Pittsburgh team. They'll play them in Pittsburgh. That's a tricky one. New England's tough, but you got Baltimore twice, who are a hot mess. You still have Miami. You still have Arizona. You still have Cleveland. There's some other tough games in there. I know. There's Buffalo, and I'm forgetting somebody else. This is a football team that if they're good enough to do what they did last night, and that's just being this thing, that's just have Flacco play at the replacement hero level he did 2 years ago when he was in Cleveland, I think comeback player of the year, they can keep the season alive. And so this wide-open AFC picture, this uncertainty in the AFC, these question marks about the two big dogs that remain, and they are question marks for Kansas City and for Buffalo, I mean, it's kind of anybody's game, right? It's kind of hard to picture and piece together who you think is going to be the team left standing, who can make a run, who can challenge those two teams. Put the Bengals back in that conversation. And I'm not necessarily crossing the Steelers off, but I'll say this. Ryan Hickey's reluctance to embrace Pittsburgh as maybe the next team up, looking pretty good in the harsh morning light of a Friday after Thursday night football. Look, Flacco has been remarkable in just two games. Two games with a Bengals team who felt like their season was over. 550 passing yards. He's got five passing touchdowns, has not thrown an interception. He's got 60 completions, and he's completing just better than 65% of his passes. Compare this to the version of Joe Flacco who was in Cleveland, who got shipped out, who wasn't good enough or certain enough that Cleveland decided to keep him. That guy had, what, two touchdown passes to, I think, six picks. This is a different guy and a different dude. And I'll say this, too. I'm not walking back my criticisms of Mike Tomlin calling out an opposing GM and an opposing organization for shipping out Joe Flacco. That's not okay. It's not right. It's not acceptable. You're spending too much time with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what's going on. You're sleeping on the wrong side of the bed. Get a better mattress, something, whatever. But he wasn't wrong. Turns out when he looked at the film, he kind of knew what he knew. Flacco's been absolutely incredible. And you could hear and see in Zach Taylor, because this is, I know the NFL is a game that exists in the margins. And I know that it's easy to overreact to games, and maybe I'll be guilty of that. But when we look back, and we don't know on October 17th. We just don't. But sometimes when we look back in January, you can say, wow, that October 16th game turned a season around. Last year, Commanders-Bears was a season-defining game for both of those teams in very, very different ways. I think it's entirely possible we're going to look back in January when the Chiefs are doing Chiefs things, and we're going to say, man, when they got that win against the Lions, and some of you will say with the help of New York City and the conspiracy theory of the NFL putting their finger on the scales, but nonetheless, that was a game changer. Chiefs 3-3, very different than 2-4. I think there's a world where this is also a similar moment, at least for the Bengals. Because Flacco played well last week in his first game with the Bengals, but they lost that football game. They didn't win that game. This was a critical opportunity for Cincinnati to believe and to show that belief is real. They can at least kind of stay, you know, keep their head above water. They don't have to rattle off seven straight wins. They just got to try to be 500-ish. A game or two over would be phenomenal as Burrow works his way back from this injury. And Zach Taylor knows all of this, and you could hear the exuberance. He was just simply wowed by the 40-something-year-old quarterback who came in and saved the day.
Outstanding. Yeah, Joe, I mean, it was outstanding, really. I mean, we how many drives, we scored on what, like six of the last seven drives maybe? Seven of the last eight? What, seven of eight? Okay, so, and really early on we had some drops and some quirky stuff happen that prevented a score there. So just thought his performance was outstanding, very, very calm, collected. Led us in a two-minute drive to go win the game with a huge go ball to T. Gave those guys a chance to go make some plays and impressed with his performance.
Yeah, look, not sleeping on Jamar Chase, not sleeping on the offensive line, not sleeping on a lot of things that happened last night. Joe Flacco is a 40-year-old washed-up cornerback who wasn't good enough to be a Cleveland Brown until he wasn't. That's the weight he was carrying. Bengals carrying the weight of, oh my God, this season's going to get away from us. And another Joe Burrow season being undone, whatever the reason, injury or anything, it approaches existential crisis if you're in Cincinnati. You only have so many of these seasons. And you don't get many of these guys in Burrow. And so for Flacco to be able to come in and to just, at a minimum, maybe the wheels will come off. I don't think so. He looked so good last night. Wasn't a fluke that they won. And by the way, I should say this. I want to hit Aaron Rodgers later. Aaron Rodgers, he turned the ball over. He played well. And especially, I think, with the Steelers being shocked by how good the Bengals were offensively with Flacco, kind of going, oh, this wasn't the game plan. I'm telling you, Mike Tomlin thought they were going to win that game 17-13 or whatever. That's what wasn't what it was. And so Aaron Rodgers had to elevate. He had to go to, okay, I got to be the guy. I got to be an offensive weapon. And that's why he had some turnovers. I got to press a little bit. And he did it. We could have been talking this morning about an Aaron Rodgers, end of the game drive, the win the thing, what a clutch player, people like Bill Ryder, idiots, he's bum of the week. And we're not having that conversation, not because Aaron Rodgers didn't get it done, but because Flacco said, hold my beer, I can do it too. And so that ability for Flacco to come in and handle that pressure, carry the weight of what the Bengals had on their shoulders, that existential crisis approaching of another Burrow season ruined, and simultaneously handle the potential end of his own career. I mean, the guy is at an age where it's certainly questionable whether you can still perform at the level that you need to. All of that pressure, all of that ability to just get it done, fighting for his own career and fighting for the Bengals season and all that rides on it because of the timeline with Burrow. And it's several more years, but you don't want to squander those things. It's remarkably impressive. And it is a reminder. And again, time comes for everybody, so what I'm about to say, it expires for everybody. Some guys are winners, even if they're not as good as other players. And I'm not trying to pick on Lamar Jackson or whoever you want me to pick. I guess I am picking on Lamar Jackson. The thing about Flacco that is amazing is he's never approached a top five talent at the quarterback position in the NFL. If you were to make an honest ranking, not knowing the Super Bowl he won and the run that he made with the Ravens, right? Regular season ranking, has he ever been a top seven quarterback in the NFL? I mean, he's a good quarterback. But what he does is he's able somehow to just have ice in his veins in the moments that matter. And one of those is historically important. The guy was with the Ravens. He was a pretty good quarterback. He went on this remarkable run. He didn't turn the ball over in that postseason run. Baltimore had a great defense, but he elevated up. He was probably the best quarterback in that playoff run. They win a Super Bowl. But also 2 years ago, he comes in to the Browns. Their season is a disaster because they paid $500 million, $250 million to a quarterback who's not available. And Flacco got it done, led them to the playoffs, comeback player of the year, made his coach, if I remember right, coach of the year. And then you fast forward again. Okay, career's over. What a career. This guy can get it done. This guy's amazing. But he's not good enough anymore. Not because he's not Joe Flacco, just because Joe Flacco's old. And all old people eventually can't compete at this level. And he proved me wrong, and he proved, I guess, Mike Tomlin, right? And he proved maybe the Browns wrong, although I understand why they would want to get to Dylan Gabriel and sort of see what they've got. What a performance from Flacco. What a gutsy, gutsy way to go out there and get a win. And it is an exclamation point behind the sentence we've been screaming on this show. The AFC is a mystery, and it's wide, wide open. Because you still have to go out there and play the Jets and the Bears and the Steelers and New England and Baltimore twice and Buffalo and Miami and Arizona, Cleveland. There's a world where you don't get it done. There's 100% a world, though, especially based on what we saw last night, where Flacco's really good, where Flacco's able to provide enough offense, enough surprising offense, and he's got weapons to do that, that this is a Bengals team that's there, that they're treading water, that they're sort of looking around, and I'm not trying to disrespect the Colts, but like some of these teams, you're really not that, the Steelers, you're not that worried about. If Joe Burrow comes back to a Bengals team that's playoff bound or can be because Flacco kept them in it, it's one of the more surprising, important storylines of this NFL season. And we got a glimpse last night. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe that's what's going on. 33-31, gutsy, gutsy victory. I guess Joe Burrow is Joe Cool, and Joe Flacco would be Joe Cool 2? Joe Cool Redux? I didn't know what Redux meant for a long time. I read a book with the name Redux. I had to look it up. It's to redo. No, maybe it's in French. I'm not really sure. All right. Aaron Rodgers didn't get the victory. He didn't get the win. He played really well, as I noted. And I don't mind some mistakes when you're being aggressive. He did the things that his team needed him to do. They didn't foresee Joe Flacco out-dueling. Some of that's because of the clock. Out-dueling Aaron Rodgers. So I'm going to give Aaron Rodgers a little bit of praise, but I'm also going to raise the concern that's always there that pissed off Aaron is lurking beneath the surface to undermine the good things happening in Pittsburgh. So we've given the Bengals their flowers. We've given Flacco his love. Let's get into what this loss means for a Steelers team who are still 4-2. And when you look at Rodgers, you can kind of see what you want to see. I'll give you my version of what I think this is and what it means next year on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
If my favorite pastime was to bring cinder blocks in my front yard and jackhammer them for sport for 2 hours a day and make the noise, okay, you could, right. That would be a little irrational. I can't grill? What are you, Aaron Rodgers? Doesn't even make sense. That's just a non sequitur insult.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Big win for the Bengals last night. Look, teams lose games in the NFL. That's part of the deal. And I don't want to overreact too much. Steelers had a chance to win that game, and Aaron Rodgers led a very impressive drive toward the end of the game that could have been the winner, and it wasn't because Joe Flacco responded in kind. All right. Joe Flacco didn't have to go as far either. I mean, whatever. It was a win's a win. Aaron Rodgers led a touchdown drive that was critical to that game. Okay. You still could have been 5-1, and you let one get away. That's not what worries me. And again, I'm going to hold on to this, and I might be wrong. I might think this is a life preserver in the roiling waves of the sports ocean. It's a rock. This might be a really bad take. I just worry about Aaron Rodgers' durability. That's not the bad take. And I worry about his attitude. I worry about him getting pissed off. I don't know if you saw this. On one of his touchdown completions yesterday, on a long one, he was celebrating. He was doing his, like, his Super Mario thing, right? Is that what it is, where he jumps and does it? And one of his offensive linemen went to celebrate with him and sort of accidentally tackled him. And you can't do that. Aaron Rodgers, I don't think he got sacked yesterday. That was, like, the biggest takedown of the game. But Rodgers got up and pushed him and was screaming at him. And, all right, I get it. You're 103 years old, right? If my brother knocked over my great-grandma, I'd probably be like, what are you doing, bro? But, yes, in this analogy, Aaron Rodgers is my great-grandma. But also, there's just a flash of anger. I'm like, oh, man, it's just bubbling beneath the surface. You hear what you want to hear on this clip. To me, also, the use of the word Mike, as in Mike Tomlin, I don't know why it annoys me. I guess Aaron Rodgers is 103 years old. His great-grandma can call people whatever they want. I just worry that you can hear the frustration here that's more than just a single loss from Aaron Rodgers.
We had a chance to really open up some space, but we're 4-2, still first in the division. Got a couple home games coming up, back-to-back, another Sunday night opportunity against my former team. So I'm not going to ride the roller coaster, and I know Mike isn't, and hopefully you guys follow suit.
I'm not going to ride the roller coaster. I hope these other guys aren't idiots. That's not what he said. I'm being unfair. I get it. We'll see. We'll see how things go. I told you this yesterday. I always do this. What am I looking for, Ryan? What's the expression?
Kool-Aid.
I was going tea. I don't know why. Who would drink that? I don't even like
tea.
Yeah. Good morning. I drink the Kool-Aid of the moment sometimes. I like positivity. I want to get into it. But I did say, oh, the Steelers are really good. They're looking great. But I did say, when the going gets tough, if things go badly, the next game, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ryan, the next game for the Steelers against none other than your Green Bay Packers, which is both a tough, is that right? It's a tough football game. It's also a very personal game. I hope I got this right. It'd be funny if they're not even playing this year. It's a very personal game for Aaron Rodgers. And so I'm just saying, fast forward after that game's outcome to that press conference, if the Packers have just beaten the Steelers, if the Steelers are suddenly in that moment 4-3, if Aaron Rodgers is dealing with the psychic difficulty of the Packers getting the best of him, right? That's his former team. How Rodgers responds to problems, to the down moments of a season, to the valleys, because it's not going to all be peaks, I think will be really, really important to what happens next. One of Ryan Hickey's favorite things in the world is me. No, I'm just kidding. It's not me. One of Ryan's favorite things in the world is looking at the schedule for college football and calling it. You always have a name. What do you call it? Prove it. What did you call it today? Prove it. Statement Saturday. I can't remember. Do you mix it? Is it always Statement Saturday, or is it Statement Saturday here and it's Prove It Saturday in a different one and it's Here We Go Saturday in a third?
So I will say, when I was filling in for you last Friday's show, the theme of the weekend was Separation Saturday, because I said
Separation.
We're going to see, you know, the boys separate themselves from the men, depending on how some of these games do go. And we saw that.
You like the alliteration. Like, so good Saturday.
So good Saturday. I got to see what we're going to have next week. Maybe it's...
Don't get soiled in your pants Saturday.
That's not alliteration. Write that one down.
Don't let your pants get soiled Saturday. I need the S next to the S. All right, some really good games. We've got LSU against Vandy. I haven't gotten my mind around the fact that Vandy's a good football team. And you noted to me that Vandy is favored over a top 10 team for the first time in 1,000 years? I don't remember how many years. Many years.
1978 was the last time they were favored over a top 10 team.
The year of my birth, our Lord, 1978.
So not that long ago, then.
Very long ago. Extraordinarily long ago. Ole Miss against Georgia is a great game. We've discussed this a little bit. Lane Kiffin, he called Kirby Smart fat, right? Like, I'm not even remotely exaggerating that.
Absolutely. Said he looks at him at his press conference and says he could use a few, you know, burn a few calories.
He was asked, who burns more calories on the sideline from their antics? And Lane said, I just saw him. He's not burning calories, basically is what he said. Tennessee-Alabama is a really good game. I was looking at the schedule yesterday or this morning, and this is so obvious, but this is one of the things out there that people are frustrated by. And I say people, I mean people that are important who are SEC homers and fans, and that's fine. Be in love with what you're in love with. Be from where you're from. Is the fact that the sort of narrative goes, if you're Indiana, if you're Oregon, if you're a lot of these programs, your schedule isn't that daunting. If you've set yourself up in a position at this point to be in the playoff, your schedule in some cases isn't very daunting going. I mean, look at Ohio State. What are you worried? You're worried about Michigan? It's not true in the SEC is how this goes. And basically the argument is the SEC is a murderer's row every week and it's not fair. Boo, 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 hoo. It is kind of true for Alabama. It just feels like every single week there's a game here for Bama where I think about when, if they lose, are we going to have the you're not Nick Saban conversation. Tennessee at Bama. Now, Bama's a big favorite, but that's a really, really good game. The one that I'm most interested in, Ryan, is USC Notre Dame, in part because I just don't buy it with USC yet because I haven't seen Lincoln Riley be consistent ever with this particular program. That is, what did you call it, statement? No, it's not Sawyer Pants.
You
Saturday,
forgot
right?
already?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that
so
forgettable?
We can do better.
Statement Saturday.
What is the statement if USC wins? Because USC got a big win against Michigan. It's also just hard to tell. I don't know how good Michigan is. I'm not sure how big of a statement that is. Now, I'll say this. Nebraska is kind of playing good football. And I believe Michigan went in there and won early in the year. And so it's, I guess, on that note, Michigan's at least a good enough football team that it's worth sort of nodding your head. But I don't know. I'll know if USC beats Notre Dame. And Notre Dame is a big favorite. They're almost a double-digit favorite in this game. I would put all the money on the Fighting Irish. But USC is 5-1. They're in the same position as Nebraska. A team that a lot of us doubted that we're going to be able to turn it around, who have high expectations in their local markets because of their coaches, and in USC's case, because of their roster. I mean, that is a talented roster every single year, and this is the big statement game. Yeah, I did it.
Sounded good. Didn't feel good?
How do you feel about Penn State's chances this weekend? They fired. All right, so James Franklin is gone. I think Franklin is an arrogant, difficult to root for, unlikable head coach who had none of that matters, who also could not win the big game. And as I told you when he got fired, as they lost games, every game became the next biggest game. They lost three in a row, obviously, to lead to him being fired. But part of the problem was, once you lose the first one, every game feels like a playoff game because of the expectations that they'd stacked. I don't know, and I'm not there. I don't report on Penn State football. I don't know whether the locker room liked him or didn't like him. That can be a different thing sometimes. You know, being an unlikable head coach to the world doesn't make you unlikable to your locker room. It can overlap. And frankly, being really charming and likable to the media and to the fan base at large and the boosters doesn't necessarily mean you're the same way to your guys. We all have bosses who are exactly who they are with everybody. We also have bosses who are the worst people on earth back in the day. I've had them. I don't have them now. Who are so charming when their boss is around. And then that. So I don't know which one James Franklin is, but we're going to find out because you might get a lift game, Ryan. I mean, there's going to be a reaction from his players, and it's either going to be bummed out, and they're going to not play as well, I think. And I know they don't have their quarterback, but I just mean effort and all the other things defensively. Or there's going to be, oh my God, the Wicked Witch is dead. Thank God that Dorothy in the house landed. He's retired. What liberation. Because at Iowa is not an unwinnable game, to say the least, but it's not an easy game. That'll say a lot more about where Penn State is than it'll say where Iowa is.
I mean, look, you look at the last 2 weeks, losing to UCLA was a hapless team going in, and losing then at home to Northwestern, I think right there kind of answers your question of how do they, like, you lose to Oregon, then you lose to the two worst teams in your conference.
You think they gave up on their coach?
That's, I mean, the effort says that, right?
Can I posit a counter theory? Sure. I think that could be right. I will say this. I am a huge believer, and I know that some former players and athletes and coaches that I know think this is like the talk of a guy that never played, and some of them will tell me you're 100% right, which means I think I'm 100% right because a lot of athletes like to just hide behind that when they don't want to be candid. I really think that teams in sports take on the personalities of the most critical figure. In college football, that is your coach. It's almost always your coach. I think that in the NFL, it really depends on the plays. I think it's usually your quarterback. I think it can be often your head coach, and I think sometimes it can even be a coordinator, or if you have like a generational talent somewhere else, usually in the defensive end. The collegiate level, college basketball, is 100% your coach, right? You're going to play the way Bill Self wants you to play, or Scott Drew, or Brad Underwood, or whoever it is. The NBA, and the NBA, it is absolutely your star player. You take on the personality of your star player. I think that in college football, with every game being so significant now because of, again, the expanded stakes of the expanded playoff and the added pressure, I'm a huge believer that teams take on the personality of their coach. And I think a lot of times that manifests itself in the games that really matter. You get down to, you got to win this game or your season's over. Or it's Ohio State versus Michigan. And I think part of the reason, I know it took Harbaugh a while, but I think part of the reason that Michigan eventually got over the hump against Ohio State and won a national championship is in part because Harbaugh, even though he kept losing, never doubted. Never. I think every game that he walked onto the field with Michigan when he was the Michigan coach, he thought they were going to win, and they did too, and that's why they eventually did it. Because they had a talent deficit for a long time while they lost those games again and again and again. I think James Franklin's a choker. I think that his anger and his frustration you see is actually masking great insecurity. I think he panics. I think he exudes loserdom in the big games, and I think his team picked up on that. So for me, I'm not sure it's they didn't want to perform for him. It's they could sense he didn't think they were going to win, and so they reflected that. That's my theory.
I know. I couldn't agree more. That's why Penn State lost that Oregon game the same way they lost every big game.
Oh, yeah.
New coordinators, new quarterbacks, new deep, doesn't matter. They lost the same way. And then, to your point, if you don't believe in your coach, you know, we've seen plenty of big teams or big coaches lose big games. Nick Saban's lost games, right?
Yep.
But they bounce back because you believe in your coach, and he says, hey, look, we lost one game, but we're on to the next one. You lose a big game, then you don't believe in your coach, and I'm sure James Franklin didn't probably have the best body language or belief in himself either that after that loss either. Snowballs into what we saw the last 2 weeks.
I've had so many, and this is one of the advantages of going through the looking glass from writer, full-time sports writer, to doing some TV and radio where I'm hanging out with the guys that I used to cover. It's a weird experience. You get to have candid conversations with guys, right? You get they're not in front of a microphone. You become social colleagues, in some cases friends, some cases not friends, but you're having candid conversations. It's just like anything else. Whatever we talk about, we try to parse, we try to see. These guys know. They know if their coach is over their skis. They know if their coach panics. They know if their quarterback is a choker. Part of the reason that, say, Baker Mayfield has had so much success is because every time he walks into a huddle, he thinks he's the most important player that God's ever granted with football talent. Like, that arrogance and that swagger matters. That belief, and I don't mean arrogance in a bad way. And so, yeah, I'm really curious what Penn State looks like against I guess the Hawkeyes, because Iowa's just gonna, what is Iowa? They're a B, not quite a B plus every year. I mean, they're fine. Penn State is still a roster that is talented enough that we should be talking about their national championship hopes and not who they're gonna hire next. And they don't have Drew Aller. I understand that. That's a big knock. Who's the backup? Frankenhofer?
His name is Ethan Grunkenmeyer.
Grunkenmeyer.
Say that five times fast.
You're the Penn State expert. Is he highly touted? Is he highly recruited? Is Grunkenmeyer gonna set the world on fire?
If he does tomorrow night, I'll say this, it would be a surprise.
Understood. All right, well, I want to see how Penn State responds with a quarterback who's not Drew Aller. Poor Drew Aller, too. They also spent a lot of money on this Penn State team. I mean, the reality of college football is when you have these massively talented rosters, especially when you get guys to come back who already had massive success and have a payday waiting on the other side of their looking glass in the NFL, it's money. It's not charm. You know, the days of, hey, come on, your mama wants you one more year. No, man, that stuff's over. It's cash. And so we're also going to see how hired, paid mercenary, paid guns, who have, you know, how they respond to that guy being gone. All right. It is a statement Saturday coming up. Let's go. College football. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Blue Jays are back. The Brewers are basically dead. We're going to hit both of those games, both of those series, as we creep closer to the World Series. Also going to talk about and answer the question definitively for everybody. Are the Dodgers good or bad for baseball? That is coming up after we get a sports flash from Crystal Presti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Bill, football's heating up. Basketball's back, so download the Prize Picks app and use code PRIMETIME. Get $50 bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. Quite the whirlwind week or so for Joe Flacco. Two games quickly under his belt as a member of the Bengals, and last night put on a show for the home crowd. 342 yards passing, three touchdowns, and the game-winning field goal drive as his Bengals edged the Steelers 33-31. Flacco balling out somehow despite this admission about the new offense he's running.
And even though you've read the play a million times, like when you hear it, it just wasn't hitting my brain right. And we were joking on the sideline. Like, anytime that happened and we broke the play and we broke the huddle and it was like, I don't know if we're right here. I mean, that play hit. So we got lucky tonight in that sense.
His Bengals improved to 3-4. Steelers fall to 4-2. Baseball, Andrés Giménez went deep for a second straight game, knocked in four. Vlad Guerrero Jr. homered for the fifth time this postseason. Blue Jays took care of the Mariners 8-2, evening the ALCS at 2 apiece. Game 5 this evening, 6:08 Eastern. After that one, the defending champion Dodgers will look to return to the World Series, finish off a sweep of the Brewers after winning at home last night 3-1. They will send Shohei Ohtani to the mound shortly after 8:30 Eastern. I'm Chris Lopresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Dan Campbell, talking to an Odyssey radio station, says the football equivalent of, I've seen Bigfoot. And I'll explain next year on Writer Than You.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Oh, wow, that's the first time that a tease in our business, a tease, this is what's coming up next, don't go anywhere. Don't turn that car off. Became a rejoin, which is what you just heard. You like that one, huh?
Well, I will say I do like to include a lot of your guest teases.
Sure.
Because usually they are just the most unrelated sort of... Speaking of Bigfoot, this guy, he has big feet because he ran for a lot of yards. It's Clay Harbor. He's coming up next. They're always funny. That's a good tease that I thought was very, like documentary-like. He said he saw Bigfoot. We'll find out next.
I love that. I love that. Speaking of things that I love and an elusive goal that could be real and possible for some lucky explorers in the sports talk radio world, we're down to 4 people in our Writer Than You Survivor, NFL Survivor pool. Winner gets to choose Bum of the Week, and that could be next week. We've got Bills Mafia 760, Farming to Victory in the 307, Josh Allen to the Bears, which is a shot at you. Let's go. OU Analytics Nerds L's. Let's go. Can I just really quickly establish, because I meant to do this before. Hope this isn't unfair to the people who remain. Can I establish what I want the tiebreaker rules to be?
Of course.
You ready? All right. I think, meaning, let's say that all 4 of these teams are eliminated this weekend. And this is very possible it's going to happen. Or there's 2 guys that are left at the end of this week, and the next week they both lose. I think first we should take total wins of the teams that they chose, and the team with the fewest wins gets it, because that means that you took, you know, less desirable teams, you took some more chances. Does that make sense? Fewest total wins of the teams you chose.
Right, you should get rewarded for, picking worse teams and getting them right.
Then I think the next one would be point differential, which would be a real pain for you to have to calculate, so I'm not rooting for that. But just the difference in point differential and the team who had the I guess we go largest margin of victory. Do you want to go largest margin of victory, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
That makes sense.
Don't punish them for close. Right.
Right. We're going to reward teams that barely get by. It could be a good team that squeaks by, a bad team, ugly game. Biggest point differential.
So first tiebreaker's fewest wins, which is to say you took the worst teams, right? You took the less easy. You did the opposite of my strategy.
And my strategy, which is backfired very quickly.
And then we'll do point differential, but that'll be the largest point differential is the winner. And then we'll just pick out of the hat. If you have to calculate point differential and they both have a point differential of plus 33 or something, then we're just picking out of a damn hat. Have you looked up who these guys are? Because there's a way to look up who people are to see whether you should be rooting for someone or not based on social media shots or praise of you.
Yes, I have them right here. Should I expose? I mean, not expose, but I guess highlight the four.
Celebrate our final four.
So OU Analytics Nerd L's is none other than Pete P.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'll be bum of the week probably. Okay. Wow, good for Pete P, dude.
Pete P coming in hot so far, one of four left.
Impressive.
Farming to victory in the 307, all we see there is Barry.
Okay, so, there's a few Barrys that hit me up. Okay.
Okay.
They're all great.
We have, sorry, just going down here to see, this is in order. Bills Mafia 760 is still alive, correct?
That was one of the, yes.
Bills Mafia 760 is Charles Pace. So congratulations to Charles.
Good job, Charles.
And Josh Allen to the Bears is Peter Engelbert.
Who, that's right, who wants to, by the way, wanted to pass on his ability to pick Bum of the Week to our radio host in Buffalo, I think, right?
Rochester, our friends in Rochester. Pete is a...
I'm sorry, Rochester, yes. I don't know if we're going to do... I'm not sure. Is that transfer? I'm not sure it's transferable.
Well, this is, I think, the time to make the rule now before we have, you know, a winner.
I mean, he can call the guy up and the guy can be like, make this... I mean, right, I think you choose Bum of the Week, but if you want to, you know, say, we're going to record whoever it is, say, I talked to my guy Johnny, and Johnny said it's you, Ryder. Okay, cool. But it's not going to be a different person's voice on the recording.
Why else would you want that?
Yeah, don't give it.
This is your spotlight.
This is your moment.
Pass it along?
Make me Bum of the Week for not letting you let the other guy decide. You know, but it's you. Yeah.
Make your neighbor, like, this is your chance. This is guilt-free. Just let it rip.
This is your moment. All right. Dodgers dominance continued again yesterday. And, let me also just say, Blue Jays won another game, 2-2, made a series of it. I'm really worried it's over for the Mariners, right? This is the problem with going up. The momentum shift is real. Remember, I told you this. I told you this, that if anybody was going to come back, it was the Blue Jays, because the weight of history is a real thing. I think I referenced my Cubs fandom, and the only team we could beat was the then Cleveland Indians in 2016. So congratulations to the Blue Jays. That's a hell of a series. The Dodgers series is all but over. It's over. They're up 3-0. The Milwaukee Brewers, the best team in the National League this year, and you can make an argument, I think, for the best team in baseball, have the fewest hits through the first three games of any playoff series in 120 years. They have 9 hits so far in the series. And here's the other thing, and this is the frustration, I think, for a lot of baseball fans. And by the way, people are watching, the ratings are good, so maybe this is a two-way street. Is it really as this series has just has slammed home the fact, the point, that the Dodgers are dominant in the team they've constructed? I mean, their pitching staff has been untouchable over the last 21 starts now. The numbers are insane. If you look at their lineup, it's just a who's who of former MVPs and studs and all-stars that they brought in from other places. They're also very, very good at developing talent. And all of this is happening despite the fact that Shohei Ohtani has been really poor. He has been extraordinarily basic. I mean, basic's not even what he's been. He's just been bad. The guy's hitting 158 in the postseason. He's 6 of 38. He struck out 17 times in these playoffs. Of those, what? 38 at-bats. Almost, and it's not plate appearances, but it's almost half of his, you're approaching half of your plate appearances ending in a strikeout. The guy doesn't do batting practice. It's just part of his routine. He did it for the first time this year, the other day, trying to get out of the groove. And the Dodgers are still just manhandling teams. What are they, 9-1 in the playoffs so far? They're basically 8-1. They're basically unbeatable. And Dave Roberts, and look, like, I'm not mad at the Dodgers. I'm not sure it's good for baseball. Dave Roberts talked about after the game that they're doing this even though his best player, a billion-dollar talent, has been, in effect, a net negative.
We're pitching really well. We're playing very good defense. Obviously, Shohei's not performing the way, you know, he would like or we expect. But I just know how big of a part he is to this thing. And we got a long way to go. But I just like the work that he's putting in, and I'll bet on him all day long.
I mean, you'll bet on him all day long because you're not the Brewers, who if their best, you know, if they had Shohei Ohtani and he was 6 of 38, you'd be right where you are anyway, down 3-0. That's the thing, and that's the problem. And here's the deal. This is bad for baseball. It is not good for the game that a team can put together an all-star team and compete against teams that are just normal baseball teams. It's also not the Dodgers' fault. I want to be very clear. The Dodgers are not bad for baseball. That they can exist as they do is bad for baseball. The system is to blame and is bad for baseball. And this argument has devolved now on social media and among baseball people. And it's, you know, this is how it always goes in America, right? You defend your side no matter what the reality is. All these Brewers fans and other fans are, this is garbage! And all these Dodgers fans, you're just a bad sport. If it were reversed, they'd be saying, they'd just be trading arguments. They would be. I'm not mad at the Dodgers for winning. I'm not mad at the Dodgers for taking advantage of the system. I am aware that the Dodgers put a lot more of their revenue back into their team than other teams. That information's out there, too. My Cubs don't. Those obnoxious owners. Come on, guys. Be better. I'm not making an argument about which owners are more invested. I'm making an argument about a system that allows this to happen. It allows it to happen because the Dodgers are in a major market. It allows it to happen because they care more than other teams in major markets. By the way, the fact that the Brewers are so good and can't compete, the fact that there are markets where if you have a good couple, 2 or 3 year run, that's supposed to be enough to last you a decade. The fact that the Pirates exist as they do, and the fact that the Cubs, among many other teams, are allowed to put a fraction of their revenue back into their baseball teams. And I'm not saying you should do 90% of your revenue the way that the Dodgers do, but it should be more than 32%. It should be more than 17%. The fact that that's acceptable is why you have to have change. And if that's a lockout, that's a lockout. And every time I say salary, I actually don't care about a salary cap. I don't. I only care about a salary cap because I want a salary floor. And there's no chance in hell the players allow a salary cap without a floor. And there's no way in hell that the owners don't at least battle for a salary cap. Maybe that battle lasts 3 weeks and maybe it lasts 3 months of a lockout. I'm just telling you what the owners want, what the players want, is not what's in the best interest of all of us. But there's a possibility, and you got to thread this needle. We got to get lucky here because we're observers. We're not the Players Association. We're not the billionaire owners who are, not the Dodgers, largely just hoarding the money they have. But there's an opportunity here as they battle each other to get the actual right outcome, and that is a salary floor and a salary cap. And you need the floor to be high enough. There's a lot of particulars here. It's not black and white the way we try to make things in America and in radio, and probably I do on accident sometimes. It's got to be the right structure and the right system. Are the Dodgers bad for baseball? No, it's not their fault. Is what the Dodgers are able to do bad for the sport? 100% bad for the game. Absolutely. Shohei Ohtani can change a series, and the Dodgers have 5 or 6 of those guys just in their lineup. To say nothing of a pitching staff that's got a sub 1.5 ERA over the last month. Give me a break. Not the Dodgers' fault. Baseball's fault. Got to fix it. But also, whatever. Go Dodgers. That's cool, too. It's been fun to watch. Let's, you know what else is cool? Clay Harbor. We'll talk to him next year. Rather than you.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Let's go and let's talk some football and some of my Bears with Chicago Sports Network. Bears analyst Clay Harbor, longtime former NFL player, tied in for the Eagles, Jags, Patriots, Lions on Twitter at ClayHarbor82. Clay, good morning. I imagine the vibe is pretty good in Chicago right now.
Vibes are high, man. We got the Saints coming into town 1-5, and the Bears have a chance to win their 4th straight game for the first time since 2018. So that's something that's been a long time coming. Hopefully they can pull it off.
Clay, as a long-suffering, long-time Bears and Cubs fan, I've learned that hope is a dangerous drug that I can't turn away from when presented to me. But I'm trying not to, but I'm feeling some hope. What are the reasons? What are the things that are going on for Ben Johnson and his football team that have them not just playing good football, but winning football games? Clay Harbor. I think dropped. We're going to see what I mean? I get hopeful. I get excited. I ask a question about – I thought it was such a good question. I thought it was such a searing insight that I just got one of those dramatic long pauses. But, in fact, Clay Harbor, Chicago Sports Network Bears analyst, is not with us. So we're going to go get him back. It it is amazing that Chicago's on the verge of winning four games in a row. And the problem with the Saints is that's a game, right? It feels like an automatic win. It feels like you should win it. She feels like a lock. And I'm a little nervous and a little worried about how it's going to go. But we're going to lean into positivity. We're going to lean into the hope and the belief that the Chicago Bears are going to be capable of keeping the good times running. And I am right now filling time because I was about to do a take, but it looks like we've got Clay Harbor back as Ryan. Oh, we don't have Clay Harbor back. He's gone. Here's the thing about what Ben Johnson has done, maybe as importantly as anything else out there. And again, I don't want to get too carried away. I think in the NFL, it's easier than anywhere else to become a captive of the moment because there's so few games that sometimes what you see is actually the reality. It is the takeaway. Ben Johnson's got these guys playing like they believe they can win football games. That win against the Commanders, the ability to win a close game against a team that broke your heart and your spirit last year, absolutely matters. And we talked earlier in the show about you take on the personality of your coach. Probably in Chicago at this point, that's still Ben Johnson, even though he's a first-year head coach. It's probably the guy. And there is a swagger to that, dude, and there is an excellence. Oh, and we do have Clay Harbor back. So, Clay, I was waxing as poetically as I could about Chicago, and I was asking you before we lost you, just what is going on in Chicago that they're playing so well and they're winning football games? What has Ben Johnson done?
I think as cliche as it sounds, they're just starting to believe. They're going from a team that would just lose these games that were winnable games. They're learning how not to lose. I remember the first thing Bill Belichick ever said to me when I signed with the Patriots. I was waiting for this crazy con. This is Bill Belichick at the time. You know, this guy just winning Super Bowl after Super Bowl. Notepad out. First thing he says, to learn how to win, you have to first learn how not to lose. And I'm like, what? I'm like, that's it. But looking at it, you can beat a third of the teams in this league if you just learn how not to lose, how not to beat yourself. You saw the Commanders last week. They fumbled the ball. Maybe they shouldn't have fumbled down the stretch. The Bears were able to capitalize, and they learned how not to lose that game. And I think they're even learning a little bit how to win. You know, Caleb Williams is becoming a clutch quarterback. In 21 games, he's already had six clutch drives that have put them up at the end of the game. They haven't won all of them. A la that Hail Mary 2 years ago, but he is a guy that has become a clutch player as well.
I love it. And obviously the Ben Johnson needs to fix, if that's the right term, or help evolve and develop, if that's a better term. Caleb Williams was a big part of the excitement and the enthusiasm around his hire as the head coach. What is the sense and likelihood from you and from people in Chicago that come what may in this season, come what may against the Saints, that Caleb Williams is going to be the franchise quarterback the Bears thought they drafted when they took him with the number one overall pick?
I think he's gonna be that guy. You know, he's cut his sack rate in half from 28% last year. So far this year, he's down at 13. He's getting the ball out on time and consistently. He's really taken charge of the pre-snap procedure, something that was a struggle all last season. You're really seeing him improve with Ben Johnson as offensive coordinator. And obviously that's why Ben Johnson led the league in scoring last year. And he is an offensive coordinator that knows how to play to the strengths of his players. And he's putting Caleb in positions for him to succeed. They're getting to know each other better and what each other likes, what each other's what the best things that he does are. And then Caleb's getting to know Ben, and the whole thing before the season was under center and play action. Caleb can't do it. And that's been one of the most successful things in his passing game so far this year, is the under center play action. And you've loved to see that. And just like last game, they had 195 yards after the catch. He's bringing a lot of that over from Detroit. So with a guy like Ben, I think that the sky's the limit. It's not perfect right now. You see Drake May playing unbelievable football. You still got the Jane Daniels guys. You know, you're gonna hear a lot of that stuff about that draft class, but I like exactly where Caleb is.
Clay Harbor, the NFC North is so interesting and so much fun, and that was true last year. With the Bears on the verge of being, you know, their record at least, making them look like a playoff contending team, how do you handicap this division going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty difficult to do. It's tough because obviously we're still unsure of what's up in Minnesota. You know, are they going to start Carson Wentz? Is JJ starting? If he's back to practice, I mean, are you going to try to go with that guy? Green Bay looks good, but not great after that first week of the season. We thought this team was just going to run away with the division and maybe even the conference after getting Micah Parsons. I mean, they're not looking like train killers out there. And then obviously you got Detroit. They're a team that's been, once again, seems decimated by injuries on defense. And you know, big loss there to the Chiefs last week. Didn't seem very competitive against the top caliber teams in the league. So it's interesting. I still think Detroit and Green Bay kind of tied up there at one. I would put the Bears at three, the Vikings at four. But I don't think there's a team in this division that couldn't beat another team in this division. I'm not saying they would guarantee victory, but there's a chance for any team to beat any team in this division. That's how close they are.
Talking to Clay Harbor here on the show, Chicago Sports Network Bears analyst, longtime NFL player on X at Clay Harbor 82. I'm Bill Ryder. This is Ryder Than You. I want to have almost entirely an NFL conversation, Clay, but you did bring up Bill Belichick in your conversation with him. I'm curious, and I know you're not an expert on UNC football, but as a person that played for Belichick, has talked to him, what is your guess or what is just your reaction to what have been some pretty clear struggles for him with that program?
Well, honestly, I thought it was weird him being in college just because, I mean, the way he runs his program, his organization, I mean, you have to be grown men, you have to be locked in. It's very accountability driven. And for me, college kids, NIL, that can leave on 1 year deals. And to me, that's not the Patriot way. That's not how Bill Belichick wins football games. So it was strange when I saw he was going to North Carolina or even college in general, just because I didn't think that was the best way for him to use his talents and ability. It's not, he can't put a program in place the way he had it when we were in New England to be successful in the system that they have now in college football.
Yeah, no, it's, and I've heard that from a lot of people. Clay Harbor hanging out here on the show. Clay, let me ask you a broad question, and this is going to lead to a Steelers-Bengals question, but I want to just be really broad here. To what degree is it wrong or right to have sweeping reactions to a single game in an NFL season? As a guy that played in the NFL, how much can we take away, even big games, from one game in an NFL season in October?
I mean, you can obviously take some things away, but you got to remember, any given Sunday, and I mean, you know, I'd be playing against teams, we win a game or lose a game, and you know, you're looking at the schedule, seeing your division rivals are playing, you go, oh, they're going to destroy those guys. We just played against them. And next thing you know, the opposite team wins and loses. The NFL is a game of matchups, and matchups change. The ball bounces a different way. So there's any week, any given Sunday, a team can lose. I think it's more of how you lose. If there's something specifically you can't stop, you know, like a certain type of run, you know, duo, zone, are you able to stop the counter? Are you able to you're not able to guard anybody? If you're looking like the Dallas Cowboys, giving up 117 passer rating against right now, which would be the worst in the history of the NFL if the NFL ended today, or if the season ended today, then there are some issues there. But I think you got to look at a collective. You can't look at one game. Sometimes teams do just have off days or bad matchups, bad play calls, you know, and it's something that's you do see is these sweeping reactions with one game. You got to just look at the collective, I think.
On the positive side, for the Bengals, I know Joe Flacco's 1-1 now as a starter in Cincinnati since that trade, but he's been really good. I mean, he's passed for almost 600 passing yards. He's got 5 passing touchdowns in 2 games. He has not turned the ball over. He's got a really high completion percentage. Obviously, last night he had a great game and was a huge part of the reason the Bengals beat the Steelers. Is it worth looking at Cincinnati with an eye toward now believing that they can be competitive enough between now and December before Burrow comes back that maybe their season very much could be alive when we get to January?
Yeah, in that division, I think so. I think that they're still you know, a possibility that they can be a team that when it comes down to the end of the year, that can be there. If they can just stay afloat until Joe Burrow gets back, then I think, yeah, anything's possible. And with that offense, you're able to outscore the Steelers, 33-31. Obviously, that game, man, looked more like a political debate than a quarterback duel when you saw the two quarterbacks lined up against each other. But with that division playing the way they are now, I mean, you got the Steelers at 4-2. You just beat them. The Ravens 1-5. I know Lamar's coming back. The Browns are just awful, great defense. So even if Joe Burrow doesn't come back and you just beat the leader of that division, supposedly the best team in the division, they were statistically now the betting favorites to win that division. So even if he doesn't come back, you're only 3-4. I think there's a chance they can win it.
Isn't that amazing? I love the NFL. Clay Harbor hanging out here on the program. Clay, what do you make of the Eagles this year? And I know teams lose games, right? The Bills have lost a couple games in a row. I'm not pretending that the Bills are going to miss the playoffs, and I'm not pretending the Eagles aren't a good football team, but their offense has been inconsistent throughout the course of the season. Is championship hangover a real thing? Is that a stupid concept? Do you have any sense of what you think is going on with Philly and their offense in particular?
Yeah, it's been interesting, and I've been asking myself this question too, like what's going on with the Eagles? Is it Kevin Petullo? Here's an interesting stat on the Eagles. Last week they passed the Titans for most drives in the league without a first down or a touchdown with 28 of them. Negative plays they've had this season, 47 for the offense, negative plays. For the defense, negative plays they've created, 22. That's the worst margin in the entire NFL. They've only scored one more point. No, they've allowed one more point than they've scored. Everything tells you right now, for whatever reason, this is an average football team. And it's tough to think that because they won the championship and they pretty much have the same exact team back. They've been outscored 51-14 in the second half the last three games. This team does not look good offensively or defensively. They have nothing to hang their hat on. They're unable to run the ball. It's pretty confounding here. I think Kevin Petullo's offense leaves a lot to be desired there. I think Jalen Hurts obviously isn't playing great football. And I think there's a disconnect a little bit between Petullo and Hurts. And then defensively, they're not getting the pressure they thought they would. They thought Jalix Hunt would be better. They thought, a few of these edge rushers would get some more pressure. Jalen Carter is still obviously very good, but he's not living up to that superstar billing that everybody thought he was. So there's a number of things. I think they can get this thing sorted out. I think they beat the Vikings this week. That'll be a tough game, but I think they get back on track this week. But yeah, right now, my former team, the team that drafted me, is not looking good.
All right, Clay, I got to run, but I want to get your view on this really quickly. To what degree do you want to buy or sell stock in the Buccaneers and or the Colts right now?
I'm buying Buccaneers for sure, and jury's still out on the Colts. I really like what they're able to do. I think having a run game like they have with Jonathan Taylor, I think he should be a guy that's in the talks for the MVP. The Colts scored 194 points in six games. That's the most points in the history of the Colts franchise. We're talking about even Peyton Manning days. So I think Daniel Jones, if you're able to keep this running game going, is going to be just fine. And Baker Mayfield, man, I mean, what this guy's been able to do is incredible. And it's crazy because these two quarterbacks are cast-offs, right? I mean, these are quarterbacks that have been casted off and let go and all of the above here. So I'm buying stock in the Buccaneers for sure, because I think they're going to continue to get more healthy. Last week, Baker with his top four receivers out, 17-23, 256, two touchdowns, 139 rating, and this guy just carries the team on his back. I think he's got to be a guy that you look at for MVP.
Clay Harbor, great stuff as always, man. It's always great having you on, but especially when there's a sort of a rainbow of hope and sunshine behind my Chicago Bears. So thank you, as always, for the time, and go Bears.
My pleasure. Bear down.
Thank you, buddy. Clay Harbor, Chicago Sports Network Bears analyst, longtime NFL player, played tight end of the National Football League. Clay Harbs, 82. I got to say that right. I said it wrong last time. Clay Harbs, 82. We have 82 ways to make you smile with the best buy or sell in the history of this show next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I hate that team, by the way. I hate the fact I do. I hate them. You know why? Well, here's why. Where they'd get together and open a bottle of champagne every year, the last undefeated team lost. You know this tradition? Shut up and stop. It's stupid. We're going to celebrate everyone's failure. Stop it. It doesn't have to be about Dolphins fans that the 2022 Arizona Cardinals lost in Week 9. Who cares?
On the Infinity Sports Network.
That was real rage by me, by the way. Could you hear it? I wasn't kidding.
It was palpable.
Good word. Can you name the Emperor from the Star Wars movies?
It's definitely not Darth Vader, right?
No.
Okay.
No, it's his boss.
Right. No, I was just like making sure. I was crossing the list of who it's not. It's definitely not Darth Vader.
Not Darth
Emperor,
Vader.
And it's not the Emperor from, obviously,
it's Palpatine. Palpatine. Right, you just made me think of it because of palpable. Don't worry about it. I should never put you in that position to have answered a question about something as unimportant as pop culture. I apologize. Let's move on. This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. Talladega Super Speedway hosts the weekend's Yellowwood 500, as there are only two races remaining for drivers to punch their ticket to the championship race at Phoenix Raceway. The only driver who has guaranteed their spot on the championship so far in that race is Denny Hamlin. You know what we should do? You know what we should rock? You know what we should get to? The greatest buy or sell in history.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Oh, boy. You're putting me in a tough spot here. Greatest buy or sell ever.
Look, man, standards are standards.
Who do you think holds the greatest segment ever for buy or sell? Do you think every day after they listen to the segment, they say, "Poof, no one's such a buyer, I can pop champagne like the 72 Dolphins"?
Great question.
That's a daily grind. That's a lot of champagne you're drinking.
There were some good ones from D-Cell. Can't remember the Klugers. That's so long ago.
D-Ben, I'm sure he's a smart, intelligent guy. I'm sure he's had a few.
Oh, I forgot that Stu produced me. I just remembered that Stu produced me. Wow.
Let's sell Stu
stock.
Stu, sorry, man. You're this one right here. This is the
look
one.
At that.
Bye.
You know what? I got a bottle of champagne ready to pop after this one here. We talked about statements Saturday. One coach already in college football, Bill, made a statement.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
And that's Indiana head coach Kirk Cignetti, who yesterday signed an 8-year extension with a school that will make him one of the highest-paid coaches in college football, and unfortunately also mean he will not be going to Penn State next season. The Hoosiers so far under Cignetti's reign are 17-2, won a program record 11 games last season, and beat their first top-five opponent on the road last week in Oregon since 1967. Buy or sell, Bill.
Okay.
Kurt Cignetti can win a national championship at Indiana.
I'm going to buy, actually.
Buy.
Not this year, I don't think.
They're going to make three.
I know.
If he makes a semifinal, wins, no joke.
If he makes a semifinal or he makes the championship game, and I think we're already there. But just the ability to raise money, more money from boosters, the ability to bring in players at an even higher level to supplement what's already working with more five-star recruits. Like, these things do take on a life of their own. By the way, in an era where I think it's a lot easier to fail now in college football, I think it's a lot easier for your program to go the wrong way. But someone fills the gap, right? Because there's other opportunities. In an era where that wasn't true, Dabo turned Clemson into a powerhouse. you can certainly turn Indiana into one. And the other thing is the Big Ten is every bit as important as the SEC. They have the last two champions, but Michigan's a little bit down. Penn State's a little bit down. Nebraska's not back yet. USC's not at the level we thought. Oregon's really good, but guess what? Indiana just beat them. So there's also some room maybe to maneuver that there might not be if you were in the equivalent program in the SEC.
Let's continue the theme of...
Good question, though. What a good start.
Oh, let's go. Okay. Let's go. Let's keep it going here. Statement Saturday features a top 10 battle between the hedges, Bill, as number 5 Ole Miss travels to Athens to take on number 9 Georgia. The Rebels so far this season are 6-0, do have a nice win over LSU when they rank number 4 in the country.
Okay.
But they do have the weakest strength of schedule so far in the SEC. Georgia looks to rebound after a few weeks ago losing at home to Alabama and make a statement that they are still one of the top dogs in the SEC. Buy or sell? Ole Miss needs to win this game to send a statement more than Georgia does.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I'll buy.
Buy.
Because you know what? If Georgia loses the game, Georgia is still among the elite of the elite of the elite of college football. That's not up for debate. I don't think I would place Ole Miss in that category, and certainly with, you know, any uncertainty. You win this game, you might start talking about what Lane Kiffin has done as, wow, has he gotten this program to an Alabama, to an Ohio State, to a Georgia level? So I think the more to prove is with Ole Miss. And by the way, Lane Kiffin's pretty good at proving stuff. Like he thrives in that sort of vibe.
Speaking of making statements, USC tries to make their own.
I don't know why that made me laugh. It really did.
Their own little statement as they beat Michigan last week, now ranked 20th in the country. The Trojans travel to South Bend to take on the 13th ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the battle for the jeweled shillelagh. The Irish, after losing their first two games of the season, have rattled off 4 wins in a row, while the Trojans' only blemish this season came on a last-second loss to Illinois on the road a few weeks ago. Buy or sell, you will consider the winner of this game to be a legitimate college football playoff contender.
Yeah, I mean, yes, buy.
Buy.
Yeah. Didn't we already talk about how Notre Dame didn't matter when they struggle because of who they are? Yeah.
Can I throw one pushback to that? We did see last year Alabama get left out of the playoff in favor of SMU. So the committee, it's 1 year in the 12-team format. They at least have a track record of your brand does not matter maybe as much as some people think.
Yeah, but I do think that SMU thing was unique in that I think there was some pressure. If it's Notre Dame against another big name, I think they'll go Notre Dame. Ironically, if it's Notre Dame against an SMU, there might be some pressure not to look like you're playing the brand favorite. Counterintuitive.
Interesting. So if you're Notre Dame, you're almost rooting to be pitted up against, let's say, Alabama at 10 and 2 versus SMU. Interesting. Very interesting.
Because then it leads to conversations about they let the worst team in because they're Notre Dame. Whereas I think like if they can sneak Notre Dame in without that conversation, they'll sneak them in. It's like people who cheat don't want to be seen cheating, right? Sleight of hand only works if people aren't looking. And the SMU-Notre Dame comparison was too on the nose, I think, to pull a fast one.
It's a good point. That's a very good point.
Try to make those.
In the NFL, Bill, how about this? Despite another rough start to the season for the Saints, Alvin Kamara does not want to go anywhere. Take a listen to what he said to reporters yesterday about him being potentially on the trade block.
I don't want to go anywhere, you know, and I've said it countless times. Y'all know that. I think everybody knows that. The fan base knows that. At the end of the day, it's business, you know. So, I don't know. If I was a GM, I guess I would go to the player and be like, hey, we're trading you, just so you know. So, if Mickey come downstairs and say that, then I'm going to go drink a pina colada.
So, as a reminder, the Saints right now at 1-5 are on the verge of missing the playoffs, so the fifth straight season does not seem to mind for Alvin Kamara. Buy or sell, you have an issue with Kamara prioritizing comfort over winning.
I mean, buy that I have a problem.
Buy!
He sounds way too joyous for a guy whose team is going to struggle to get 3 wins.
Again, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Now, it's like the Ravens, okay, one down year, but we have Lamar, you know, whatever. You have reason for the... Where's the reason for optimism for the Saints after this year?
I'm going to try a new name on you, but you can, a new nickname. You can buy or sell it. Alvin, I don't care.
Bye.
Okay. Okay, you thought about it.
I like it. I like it.
Thank you.
I was going to say something, and I...
You don't know where to move on to. Yeah, you like it, but you're also speechless in a bad way. So
that's
right. I don't
know how to...
Yeah.
I have too many, or rely too heavily on the transition. I could not transition from a good nickname. So we're just going to go dry into the next one, Bill. The Titans. They played their first game without Brian Callahan this weekend as they host the Patriots. Now, last season, we saw three NFL coaches fired in season. One of those teams won their first game after firing their coach. So 1-2 in terms of, you know, the initial jump after firing your head coach. Mike Vrabel comes to town in Tennessee for the first time since the Titans fired him after the 2023 season. Buy or sell? The Patriots will beat the Titans by at least 20 points.
Oh, wow.
Just an absolute revenge beatdown.
Yeah.
Bye.
If he can, he will run. Yes, he will run the score. Yes. And the Titans are, as you know, as we know, bad. And I think the Patriots... By the way, the Patriots are going to be 5-2. They might be real good. Colts lose a game. All of a sudden, we should be talking about the Patriots. Maybe we can talk about the Colts.
Patriots first place in the division, just like we all thought, a third of the way through the year.
It is kind of crazy. By the way, Vrabel, you haven't been here. You've been here for a few months, but I've been pounding the Mike Vrabel drum for a long time. The reason he didn't get hired is he's difficult to work with. I mean, that's why he didn't get hired. He's a really good coach. Or I should say there's an impression that he's difficult to work with.
Sure, maybe those some in Tennessee would agree with that, but it should be interesting to say the least. In baseball, the Blue Jays have turned the tables on the Mariners as they now won the last two games in Seattle to even the ALCS at two games apiece. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been white hot so far this postseason, smacking a franchise record 5 homers in the playoffs while batting .455 through the Blue Jays' first 8 games. The road team in this series, by the way, 4-0. Buy or sell, the Blue Jays will win the ALCS.
Oh, man. I don't want them to. Bye.
Bye.
Can I go back in time? I think I may have sort of been less than positive about Guerrero Jr.'s massive contract whenever he got it. Can I just reverse and buy that I always was... Yes, what a great...
Bye.
Bill, buy or sell, the Blue Jays giving Vlad Guerrero Jr. a big-time deal is a smart move.
Always said bye. You know, bye.
Bye.
That's my favorite, and by favorite, I mean obnoxious and dumb radio host thing. Who taught radio hosts they can never admit they're wrong? I remember once I was listening to this network, and there was a guy filling in somewhere on our network, and he spent the entire show talking about how, I don't know, the Colts were a joke, and they were going to lose, and it was terrible, and the game was on. And then the team won. And then he just opened the next hour with... I always knew it just did. Like, dude, the same people are listening.
I never had a doubt. I always knew.
As I told you forever.
Matt Ryan leading that comeback, no doubt about it.
I was wrong about Vlad Guerrero Jr. being worth that amount of money. I saw so many contracts that didn't work for the Padres, right? And some other organizations, but whatever, dude. That guy's amazing.
You know who else might be wrong?
Tell me.
Phillies president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah.
Who wasn't the one, but still is part of the Phillies, who gave Bryce Harper a few years ago a big, big, big time deal. Well, listen to the Phillies president of baseball ops yesterday have some pretty harsh words about what he expects in the future of his former MVP.
In Bryce's case, of course, he's still a quality player. He's still a all-star caliber player. He didn't have an elite season like he has had in the past. And I guess we only find out if he becomes the elite or he continues to be good. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, it's like if you say to me, I look around the league, I was trying to think, Freddie Freeman, he's a really good player, right? He still is a good player. Is he elite like he was before? Probably not to the same extent. And so that's nothing, because, you know, Freddie's a tremendous player. And that's, to me, is Bryce.
Buy or sell, Bill. These comments are unacceptable from Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah, it's... My first instinct is to buy it. And by the way, there is nuance and candor to his answer that isn't going to come across in a quick description, right? He said Bryce Harper's not elite. Okay, yes. But also there's some praise and some... And he might be... The other thing I find really strange about this is that Bryce Harper is just a streaky player, not just in seasons, but sometimes season to season. he has these seasons where he looks awful. And if you look at on base percentage and some of the newer metrics, it's less than awful. But whatever, the traditional sort of are you a superstar numbers, they vary in his career. I know he's older, but it's not unheard of for him to have a down season by his standards and then come back and win an MVP or almost do that. So it's bizarre. What do you have a theory as to what he was thinking?
I mean, just being honest, I don't know if he's trying to light a fire because he is like an emotional player, if you will.
Right,
so
right.
Maybe he's trying to like light a fire under his tush going because he knows they can't like
tush.
Under his tush.
You swore yesterday. It's good that you get your act together.
Making it G-rated here as much
what
as I can.
What are you doing?
But I'm sure he knows there's not many moves they can make. They're probably going to re-sign Kyle Schwarber. Like, they have a lot of money tied in this team. They're a little bit older. So it's like you can't really make outside of the margins a ton of big swings. So maybe he's just trying to rattle some cages in the hope that that wakes guys up and has them playing better next year. Otherwise, I don't know.
I'd love Bryce Harper to call a press conference and do a very similar thing. You know, maybe he's still an elite GM, but I mean, like, I think he's good, but he made some decisions that weren't great. He gave me a lot of money for a long time. I don't know if he's still elite.
Look at that trade deadline. We can really get better, right. Swing and misses. Look at some of the draft picks. They're nowhere close.
Couldn't get past the Dodgers. That's a roster construction thing. But we got, it's not like we're bad, like Freddie Freeman. We're good.
He's got to prove it,
Not sure he's elite. Are we done?
By the way, we are done. Clean sweep. 7 for 7 buys.
All buys today.
All buys from you today.
Wow, that might be on the person that put the segment together.
I can't read your brain sometimes.
Anytime. We'll try to read this. Try to read this one, Ryan. Who's going to be bum of the week? Is it going to be me? Is it going to be LeBron? Could it be Tua Tagovailoa with his void of silence? Let's get a void of silence going on for bum of the week after a sports flash from Crystal Presti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And Bill, sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Well, it was a Thursday night thriller in Cincinnati. A couple of QBs in their 40s going toe-to-toe. Joe Flacco and the Bengals out-dueling Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers as Flacco threw for 342 in 3 scores and led the game-winning field goal drive as Evan McPherson kicked Cincy past the Steelers 33-31. Zach Taylor's team finding a way.
It's a huge win. It's a huge win. We needed this. We just, it'd been too long since we won. And so when you're fighting for all these things that we fight for and these guys just keep coming at it. As a coach, you just keep sticking with it. I see it coming. And for you need the results.
They get to 3-4. The Steelers fall to 4-2. The Rams have ruled out Puka Nacua with an ankle injury for Sunday's game against the Jaguars in London. Jets wideout Garrett Wilson doubtful for Sunday's home game against the Panthers. He's dealing with a knee injury. To baseball, league championship series, ALCS is now even at 2 after the Blue Jays beat the Mariners last night 8-2. Game 5 this evening, 6:08 Eastern start. Kevin Gausman opposed by Bryce Miller. And the defending champion Dodgers go for a sweep and a close out of the NLCS against the Brewers. They'll send Shohei Ohtani to the mound shortly after 8:30 Eastern. I'm Chris Lopresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. It's Writer Than You. I'm Bill Ryder. What's up? Happy Friday. eBay is home to millions of finds, and each one becomes part of your story. From your favorite vintage band tee to the dream car you've been searching for, it's all there. eBay, things people love. The Thunder are just days away from defending their championship as Oklahoma City tips off the season on Tuesday night, hosting the Houston Rockets. While there hasn't been a repeat NBA champion since the Warriors did it back in 2017 and 2018, Vegas has the Thunder as decided favorites to repeat as NBA champions. Who was last week's Bum of the Week? Who would need to repeat to be Bum of the Week this week?
It would have to be James Franklin.
Oh, that's right, because was I gone last week?
You were gone last Friday.
Man, I'm not going to lie. I love doing the show. That was nice being away with my wife.
James Franklin could win if he wins today for the third straight week, because you had him on Thursday before you left for losing to Oregon and complaining about it.
We already have a back-to-backer.
We are going for a three-peat, something the Chiefs could not do.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm proud of that guy for being real bum-like. Let's see what we got here. See if he can do it again. Bum of the week.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
They're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
They ask. It's a good question. Let's find an answer. Okay. I got to nominate I got to nominate Bill Belichick. Just, do I need to explain? I don't think I do.
He's a usual on this list.
I'm gonna nominate LeBron James, by the way. The Hennessy decision thing, did you see? Did we discuss that the ticket price has spiked? People thought he was going to retire. Everyday people spent tons of money.
Someone's suing him.
I know. Good luck.
I don't know if he's going to win, but...
A guy that I know was complaining to me about it the other day. He doesn't have a lot of money. He spent, right? He thought it was going to be LeBron's goodbye game. And, by the way, not just obnoxious, but on behalf of an alcohol company... I mean, it'd be one thing, it'd be still obnoxious, but if it was the, I don't know, Boys and Girls Club of America or something.
Nice charity give back, bring attention towards that.
And it was just badly done.
Yeah.
I'd like to drink this drink that paid me money that I probably never drink.
Very weird.
Yeah, it was weird. All right, LeBron's nominated. I'm nominated for, who was I judging? Was it Terang who wouldn't?
Bryce Terang for getting out of the way of a slider coming in.
Tony Gwynn Jr. I like it. He's like, no, man. You hitting 571 when you were 12. That's what I hit. Doesn't get it done. Got it in there, though. Tua's nominated. Can we just, for this act of poetic amazement.
I've made a mistake. The intent was right. But no matter the intent, you know, the intent can be right. But when things get misconstrued or however the media wants to portray it, you know, that leaves a void of silence and a lot of questions for the guys on our team.
We got a lot of questions. There's definitely a lot of questions to a void of silence. I'm still trying to figure out if a void of silence means that there's no silence. Okay. Those are, so far, Bill Belichick, LeBron, me, and Tua. When did James Franklin get fired? He got fired on Sunday, right?
Sunday, after losing to Northwestern.
I mean, James Franklin. You got to be nominated.
From national championship favorite or top favorite to fired in like 6 weeks.
I never try to think about the previous week, so he's a strong contender. Anybody that I'm missing that you want to put on this list?
It's not a person, it's a group.
Okay.
I hope that's okay.
Yes, it is.
I'd like to nominate the Steelers defense. Ooh. Highest paid defense in the league, and they got torched by Geriatric Joe, who looked really good. 3 touchdowns. 300 yards passing. He's there. He's literally there for a week in a big game. Torched him.
You love the alliteration. You are crushing Geriatric Joe. I can't even say it.
You like that?
I did.
I'm proud. I will say I came up with that myself.
I'm gonna. It's tough. I want 3 finalists. You know what I'm saying?
Are you struggling getting to 3, or are you struggling whittling it down?
Whittling it down.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm gonna give the Steelers defense a break. All right, I'm gonna make myself a finalist.
Okay.
Yeah. I gotta make Tua a finalist.
Okay. Void of sounds. Definitely.
I think I gotta make James Franklin a finalist, right? Bill Belichick and LeBron get a pass.
Wow, I'm actually surprised you left LeBron out of the top 3.
You know what? I'll do 4 finalists today. There's a tie.
Why not? Yeah. One thing Bill Ryder loves, it's ties.
I like those ties. Oh, this is tough. This is tricky. This is tricky. This is tricky. You know what? Oh, man, I kind of want it to be me. I kind of want it to be Tua. But the fact is that you can't be an arrogant, I'm smarter than you, prancing super coach and then turn your national championship contending team into a punchline as you take your $48 million golden parachute and just coast off at whatever place will have your arrogance and your ego. James Franklin, you loser. You're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
Alright, so I separate week to week, but not in the totality. That guy just became the front runner for bum of the year, right?
He now, I believe, has won bum of the week 4 times because he won in the preseason.
What did he do in the preseason?
Let me pull it up. You were upset about, I think, a quote he said.
And by the way, if you're going to be a preseason college football bum of the week coach, you better win games. This guy's Lane Kiffin without any of the charm or any of the success.
So James Franklin won back on August 1st. I'm just going to read what I wrote. Bumness being residually alive. Ryan Harris calling him out, thin-skinnedness, and already undercutting Penn State's national title chances before the season even starts.
Well, I called that one, didn't I?
Wow. You and Ryan Harris look pretty smart right now, I will say.
We should find that Ryan Harris clip and just celebrate him next time. Just play it next time he comes on.
He right. nailed that.
Do you give the Brewers any chance even to just get to a fifth game? Or do you think they give up the ghost? Game four is in L.A. It's at Dodger Stadium. And the thing is, the Dodgers have won some close games. Like, they haven't had the Blue Jays 13-4 blowout we saw in Game 3. The Blue Jays had, right? Yeah, Game 3 over the Mariners. I think the Dodgers, I think it's over.
I think
the Brewers give up the ghost.
Shohei on the bump. Game 5's in L.A., so it's kind of like not even like, oh, if we win this one, we'll get back home. And like, you still got to go win
right,
in L.A.
2-3-2.
Right, again, which
two,
is three, tough.
2-3-2.
I probably agree. I think we see the brooms out tonight in L.A.
Is it today and Saturday?
I believe it's today and tomorrow. Yes, because today's Friday.
Right, right. So you've got it's an onslaught of baseball. It's an onslaught of these dudes. All right. Thank you to Clay Harbor for being on the program. Really enjoy talking some football with him and some NFL. Thank you to Crystal Presti for doing a great job filling in for our guy, Andrew Bogish. Thank you to James Franklin for his bumness, just giving us content all the time. And thank you, Ryan Hickey. Great job this week.
Thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Let's see if we have on Monday a Rider of the New Survivor Pool winner who will name next week's Bum of the Week. It'd be funny if they just named it James Franklin just to guarantee him Bum of the Year. Just gave it to him, even though he's not in the news. They can do whatever they want. It's theirs. All right, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill Ryder. See you back Monday on Rider of the New.